Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed, we are, and it is season 4, episode 8.
Indeed, it is.
What's our topic this time, Drew?
Well, you might have seen this one bouncing around Twitter recently as part of kind of. There have been a lot of tweets in different art forms on this subject. So the one we're doing is. It's kind of five games that define us. Someone originally posted a tweet that said, if you had to recommend someone play five games to really get a feel for you and your tastes, what five would you pick? And you may have seen that about films as well, TV shows. It's been a bit of a Twitter meme lately, but we decided to go with games because we are nominally a gaming podcast, and should we do films next time? We should do
Yeah,
the same
we
thing.
could have done 2 episodes. We were going to try and do 2 episodes back to back, but, so we could have just done a films one as well.
We could. Too
Like,
late now, though.
yeah. We're
So
doing
yeah,
games.
yeah. So we're. I don't. We haven't stuck particularly rigidly to the brief. We've picked five games that maybe say something about us, rather than definitely something that reflects our tastes. Because I don't know about you, but I found it really hard to find five games that reflected all of my tastes. This is still going to be like a very small subsection of the kind of stuff that I'm into.
Yeah, exactly. It is. You just end up thinking, because then you hear what someone else has chosen. You're like, oh, yes. Oh, that means that I've forgotten, which we've just done before hitting record on the show.
I changed one of my games because you mentioned something else. So yeah,
And so did I. You mentioned something else, and I was like, oh, yeah. Or you mentioned why you'd chosen that thing, and I was like, oh, I didn't think of that. So this is what it is. Yeah, we probably won't laminate these lists or anything.
No.
It's just good fun. So, are we going to go alternate? I suppose that'd be more interesting.
I think that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, first up, they're not numbered in any particular order either. Well, mine aren't. There is
Nope,
no
mine
sort
neither.
of importance. Okay, so first up, Drew, what's your first game?
My first
What does it
game.
say about you?
Oh, I don't know what it says about me. I mean, this is one of the one that sort of reflects my taste. The first one which sprung to mind for me is Spelunky or Spurunky, which is a game that I have put quite a lot of time into. It's I think like second on my Steam list of I put about 150, maybe 200 hours into it. And if you haven't played it, what it is, it's a randomly generated platformer which generates a set of 16 random levels, and you kind of have to make your way from the beginning to the end, and you have one life. Once you die, that's it, that's game over, you start again and go from the beginning. And it's the reason I like it is it's for the same reason that I like games like Far Cry and Breath of the Wild and Heat Signature, in that it's less of a strictly designed game and more a strictly designed set of systems that co sort of coalesce to form a game with a really interesting amount of challenge. And I've always sort of been skeptical about randomly generated games. There were a few of them on like the PS2, like I think the Dark Cloud games kind of advertised randomly generated dungeons, and I was always was really skeptical about that because I want designed content rather than, playing through what I can tell is an algorithmically generated sort of thing, which is also kind of why I didn't get along with No Man's Sky. But Spelunky changed my mind on that, and I've spent about, literally hundreds of hours crawling through randomly generated levels, and I'm still not quite bored of it. I still go back and play it every so often because it's kind of a 20-minute game, which I usually lose anyway and have to cut out anyway, cut out early. But yeah, that's one of my favorite games and one of the ones I've sunk the most time into in my life, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I have not played Spelunky.
No, I highly recommend it, although
Okay.
it's one of those games which has a very steep learning curve,
Oh,
and you kind of
God.
have to learn the system. It's the same thing I always say about Dark Souls. It's once you've learned how it works, you will figure it out and you will get really good at it. But that first I think probably the first 5 hours of Spelunky is incredibly difficult.
Oh, blimey. Yeah, maybe once when I'm retired.
Yeah.
I have more time on my hands. I wish I was a student again, because games, there are so many great games now. It must be just joyous to be a student these days.
I mean, that's when I discovered Spelunky and when I got into it. So I had all of that time to spare. Yeah. So I don't know if I'd be able to do it again today. They have announced a sequel.
Yeah,
the trailer
dropped
for that a couple of weeks ago, so...
Oh, okay.
I guess I will be going through that again.
Yeah, you'll find out. So my first one is Space Channel 5. I chose this. I think it's just it represents an era of gaming for me that was just golden. The Dreamcast years were just incredible. There was just some really interesting stuff coming out on Dreamcast, and Space Channel 5 was just one of those really iconic games, in terms of the styling of Ooh La La, her clothes, her platform boots, the kind of disco thing, the fact that they had a Michael Jackson character in there, or Michael Jackson was in it, Space Michael Jackson was in it, and yeah, it was just sort of gloriously fun, kind of 90s stroke noughties disco space shoot 'em up rhythm game thing that you just don't get games like that anymore. Yeah, I just love Space Channel 5. It was, for those that don't know, it's basically a rhythm shooting game, except you say shoot instead of shoot. There's no T on the end of shoot in Space Channel 5. And you play a roving reporter who works with Space Channel 5. It's a news reporting site or channel. And she has this kind of orange, it's like a retro future. Because in the 90s, everyone was obsessed with the 60s, so everything had this kind of 60s vibe to it, and Ooh La La has that. She is just, like, completely on trend for mid to late 90s. And she has, like, bright pink hair in bunches and in a sort of, like, 60s do, and her, like, platform boots and her mini skirt, and she'll have, like, the full glass retro future helmet with a little antennae on, and she has a microphone, and she's saving, like, people have been taken hostage by these little alien characters who are the ones that shoot you, and she defeats them through the power of dance. Which just says a lot about me, really. I'd love to save the world through the power of dance. And she's just, her catchphrase was, ooh la 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 la, that was fabulous. She's just awesome. She's just all kinds of fantastic. And I'd really like to see another Space Channel 5 game. It's just really good fun. The music's really cool. Oh, the other thing is, like, when you... the more successful you get and the more hostages you rescue, you basically build a dance troupe behind you. But if you start shooting out of rhythm and you start losing the game, their dance moves become all sluggish and they're like, oh, and everything kind of goes. And so, but when you're on it, you've got, like, this dance troupe behind you, just, like, strutting towards the camera. It's awesome. It's so cool.
It's really difficult not to dance along when they're doing that. When you've got the controller, like, you're kind of going along with it. I played it it was about a year ago now. I think I played it on your recommendation because we were going to do, like, an episode on, we were doing, like, a game exchange where I got you to play Half-Life and you got me to play Jet Set Radio, and it didn't actually pan out into an episode.
No.
But you also recommended Space Channel 5, which I had the second one of on Steam, and I played through that, and I just got very, very into it for about a day and a half and then kind of forgot to go back to it. But I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, it's good fun. So that was my one. Number two, Drew?
My number two is Resident Evil 3 for the PlayStation, and I think also the Dreamcast it came out on, and then later on the GameCube. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in my childhood playing the Resident Evil games. I bought Resident Evil 3 when I was kind of a little bit too young for it. I think it was rated 15 in the UK, so yeah, I got it when I was about 11 or 12. And yeah, I got obsessed with it for sort of one summer, just kind of beating it and then starting to speed run it, because all of the original Resident Evil games, they're kind of geared so that once you know how they work, you can get through them in about 2 hours. So I spent a long summer just improving my time and improving my time, and I actually won like a competition in a magazine for the fastest time for Resident Evil 3. Aww. So I was maybe like the record holder. And and you know, I still go back and play them occasionally, and what I really like about them, and it's something that's kind of carried through to the survival horror games that I like now, is that they're all about having very limited resources, and you have this kind of enemy in great numbers. So that's the fun of survival horror for me. It's actual survival, you know. It's the same in like System Shock 2 does the same thing. It gives you very little ammo, and your enemies are also almost inexhaustible. So you have to make decisions. You have to conserve ammo. You have to decide, well, can I dodge around this person rather than going straight through? Is there any benefit to fighting? And yeah, especially when you're playing it through for the first few times, and you don't quite know what you're doing, you end up in kind of, not procedurally generated, but kind of randomly generated situations where you're kind of trapped in a corner with advancing zombies, and you've got 3 bullets left, and you're wondering which is the best place to put them so that you can escape. And that's just a really excellent experience, especially in the context of survival horror. And it's something that Resident Evil 7 actually did really, really well as well. Hmm. So, yeah. So that's my second.
Okay, my second is Virginia.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I think if a game tells someone about my tastes, I think Virginia is a really good one, because it says something about my film tastes, as well as my taste in games. So for those who may be new to the podcast and haven't heard us wax lyrical about Virginia, or especially me, about Virginia before, it's an indie game. It came out a couple of years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Has, I suppose, the sort of lazy way to describe it is kind of Twin Peaks meets X-Files. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. So it's definitely drenched in that sort of hazy Americana feel. You play as an FBI agent who is a black woman, and she, so you go to her first day at work. She's just graduated, and she has her first day at work, and the story is told with no dialogue, so it's all through gesture in this beautiful low poly animation style. And the little things they get across about the sort of pressures of being a woman woman of color in an all male and primarily white male working environment. There's just a little scene where she is deciding whether or not to put lipstick on, and those little decisions that women have to make in male dominated workspaces is really telling. And then when she gets into the lift, everybody else in the lift with her is male. It's just all said in complete silence, but it says so much. And then it has this, it has a core relationship with another black woman who has been relegated to the basement, which you always know is the lowest of the low in the FBI.
Yeah.
So
the Mulder station.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So she's, at Mulder status, and there's this strange mystery, this disappeared boy that they're investigating, and it gets very surreal in this kind of Lynchian way. It has an ambiguous ending, so which are all things I absolutely love. And I know that you kind of were suspicious of the open ending and the surrealness maybe not actually having a point or holding together, but I really enjoyed it, and I felt it, there was enough there for me to feel that that there was a story and a point to the things. But yeah, it's just kind of quite a landmark game, having two women of colour in a, even in an indie project like that, and just told the stories and really well. And the relationship, the core relationship, is kind of heartbreaking as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really stayed with me, that game.
Yeah, I want to go back a bit and play it again now, because you're right, when I played it the first time, I was suspicious of the ending. It's a suspicion that I always have with, like, with actual David Lynch stuff. I was going to say with Lynchian stuff, but even with David Lynch himself. And I want to go back and play that again now that I've watched a little bit more David Lynch. I watched Mulholland Drive quite recently, and see if I loved that film and I loved the ending of it, and I want to go back and see if it recontextualizes the Virginia ending for me.
Yeah, that would be good. Number three.
I've gone with Fallout New Vegas, which I think might be kind of the best open world RPG ever, maybe. It's open world. Out of the Fallout games, I think it's probably got the least open world, but that kind of works in its favor, because you get a very good sense of the structure of the map as you play through it. It's got a really great setting. It's Fallout. It's post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland with, 1950s technology, which is just lots of fun. It's really smartly written in a way that the kind of Bethesda Fallouts aren't. It was written by Obsidian, who are known for making sort of well-written RPGs, and it's got a bunch of kind of varied, interesting characters with their own goals and relationships, which kind of conflict and match with yours depending on, you know, how you're playing. And it's got this really interesting plot through line, which kind of, it sort of gently guides your journey around the map of New Vegas, rather than actually forcing you along a main quest path. So in New Vegas, you can, like, the ultimate goal of maybe the first two acts of the game is to get to and get into New Vegas. And you can kind of just walk there from the beginning if you want. If you can avoid the enemies, there is a direct route, which you'll probably get killed if you go that way, but it's not definitely. You can sort of sneak your way around and just get there immediately. But it makes more sense for you to follow the route, the long way around. You kind of go around the horn to get there. And it's, you're never kind of dragged through that. It's just a journey that you are making. And you go off into all these various different, like, towns, and you do small, like, quests there, all of which are kind of optional, and you can still just walk past them and keep going to the next thing. And then, of course, what Fallout does really well is the vaults, which kind of function as small, enclosed, like, social sci-fi short stories to, like, explore on the main event. So it's always, you know, a set. If you don't know the lore behind Fallout, the vaults are, they're nuclear fallout shelters designed by a certain company just before the bombs fell. And they got people into them, but it turned out that they were kind of just social experiments. So every vault has a different, like, gimmick, which the company were using to explore human behavior, kind of like the Milgram experiment, only just infinitely more strange and messed up. And Fallout New Vegas has some really interesting ones. It also has a couple of really bad ones, but they're few and far between, and most of that game is just really well written, and there you explore those on the way to kind of the main event of the plot, which has, like, multiple satisfying conclusions. There are two factions, and you can side with one of those, or you can side with a third secret party, which you kind of can find if you go out of the way a little bit. And I think there's a fourth way where you just do stuff for yourself as well. But yeah, it's an incredible game, and again, that's in my Steam list as something I've spent multiple hundred hours on.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, I was talking to someone else about Fallout recently.
Like, yeah.
I think they said that was the best one as well.
Yeah, I think it's like the fan favorite.
Okay.
I think it's perceived a lot as kind of a spin-off one, which wasn't as good. Mm. But Fallout fans tend to like Fallout New Vegas, certainly more than Fallout 3 or 4.
Mm. Okay. Mm. Yeah, I can't get on with the Fallout games. I just find them too depressing. Yeah. It's, people enjoy it, love them so much. I wish I could jump on that train, but it's not to be. Instead, I will jump on a skateboard.
Oh, very, very smooth segue.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wow, it's like we've been doing this for 3 years.
Yeah.
So my number three is Tony Hawk's Skateboarding. And yeah, it's because you mentioned that you'd played something for so many hours. And then I was like, oh, yeah, how could I forget? Mm. This was one of the games that I swapped in for something else. Because I spent a good, I don't know, 3 months playing the demo alone, never mind the games.
We were talking about this beforehand, and yes, me too, that exact demo.
Yeah, it was incredible. A friend who worked in the industry brought it home one day. He's like, oh, I got a demo for this. And then he came round and went off, and then he came back some weeks or months later and he was like, my god, are you still, because we were like, came in and Tony Hawk's Skateboarding was paused so we could open the door. And then he was like, my god, you still playing that demo? We were like, yeah, it's amazing. And it was just, and I mean, the demo had, what was it, one or two arenas maybe, or skate
the
parks?
One I had was one, I think. No, now that I think about it, it might have been two. It was one of like the main levels and one of the smaller competition levels.
And so there was like the indoor skate park, and it was just endless fun. It was really satisfying. The clunk, the sound effects were brilliant on it, the sort of clunk of the skateboard and the sort of rumble of your wheels on different surfaces, and the fact that you could get into, if you could get into the zone, that's what we used to call it, if you could get into the zone and into the rhythm of that game, you could just like pull off these amazing tricks, and you could find new ones as you played it, because obviously we had the demo, so we didn't know how to do anything, we were just kind of like messing about with it. And it just felt so great. It felt like skateboarding but without the risk of broken wrists and stuff. The music was great. It just, like, again, it kind of represented an era. Just had a great soundtrack and really kind of glamorized the whole sort of skateboarding lifestyle and aesthetic and everything. It was such a cool game. Just a really simple idea that just was brilliantly done.
I mean, it kind of invented a new genre of those games. I can't remember whether there were any like extreme sports games or successful skating games before Tony Hawk. I think it was kind of the progenitor. I spent just as much time with that demo. I think I must have got it off like a magazine cover disc or something. But yes, I can remember, like, I can picture the layout of the level in my head. I know where all of those boxes are, and I know what song is playing on that demo, and it's Superman by Goldfinger. The only like ska track that I know.
It has some great tracks. Yeah,
it's interesting that that genre seems to have fallen by the wayside lately. There haven't been any good skateboarding games in quite a while, not since like EA did Skate and Skate 2.
No.
And even those kind of went away. I went back and played Tony Hawk 4 on the PS2 not so long ago, and it's still amazing fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just love to see a really well done like PS4 version of...
They did bring Tony Hawk's back, didn't they? And
They did a remaster of like the first couple of games, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean,
people didn't really like. I didn't go near it but there is like a nice little indie game that's in development, and I follow the person on Twitter, and I can't remember the title of the game. I think it is something as simple as Skate, and it's like a low poly but just really beautiful looking game. And again, it has that. It's just it's a very pared back aesthetic, but beautifully animated. And then you just hear the rumble of the wheel, the just like. Of the wheels and that clatter of the, and it looks amazing. It looks really beautiful. I think it's just called Skate, but I
doubt it's just called Skate because Skate is definitely an EA property. They would cease and desisted.
Fair enough. The
way you said that, feeling the kind of rumble of the wheels, it just occurs to me that that would be a really good thing to do on Nintendo Switch because it has like the HD rumble stuff, which can produce lots of different sensations, and you could simulate the wheels and the clattering of that really well.
Mm.
Oh, I want that now. Somebody make that. Make Tony Hawk on Switch.
Yeah, I just want that guy to finish his. Because it just brought back memories of Tony Hawk on that, and I'll definitely pick that up. I'll try and find out what that was and put it in the notes or something. So number four,
I'm gonna go with Rock Band 3, which is another game that I spent so much time with in university. I started playing plastic guitar games very early on. I played Guitar Hero 2 when it came out, and it was one of those games where I bought it, and I think I didn't like it at first because it's kind of like it's a skill you have to learn. Those games, like, they're not easy from the beginning. You can't just, you know, pick up a guitar, go on expert, and start playing. You have to kind of start at the really easy ones, and it takes forever for your fingers to learn how to play the games. But I think I didn't like it. But I'd spent, like, I was 12 or 13 at the time, and I'd spent, you know, 40 quid or 50 quid, probably a bit more, on this, and like that's birthday money, so I just had to play it because otherwise I'd wasted everything. Like, that was all the money I had in the world. Then after a while it kind of clicked and I got into it really, really heavily. And then Guitar Hero got kind of sold off to another company. It started getting made by Activision and I think Neversoft, who also worked on the Tony Hawk's games. And Harmonix sort of branched off. Harmonix made the original Guitar Hero games, and they did Rock Band, which was the same thing, except now they brought in vocals, they had a drum set, they eventually brought in a keyboard, and like even a kind of more realistic guitar. And once those games came out, and they established, like, Rock Band 3 came out, and it established the game as it was a core game that you bought, and then you bought song packs for it, and they released loads of songs. They released songs every week, and I actually broke out my old Rock Band set again the other day, having just had an urge to play it again and realizing I still had all my stuff lying around. And it turned out that I'd bought about 300 of those DLC songs. I've got a really big library of Rock Band stuff. So wow. Yeah, I've started playing that again recently, and it wouldn't have occurred to me to put it in this list if I hadn't just sort of picked it up again two or 3 days ago. But I spent most of my first run at uni playing that game in my spare time, and now I'm really good at it. But I've lost some of my skills, which is annoying. I can't play as well as I used to.
It'll come back.
I'm sure it will. Yeah, if I put another, you know, few hundred hours into it, I'll be back up to where I was.
With your second life.
Yeah.
My number four is What Remains of Edith Finch, which is probably the newest game on either of our lists, probably.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
I mean, this... I'm a writer just through and through. It's what I am. It's what I've always been. That's what I do. And What Remains of Edith Finch is about storytelling. It's a real writer's game, and it's just beautiful. I love it. I gave it 5 out of 5 for the Guardian review I did. I really like their preoccupation with storytelling as developers. And What Remains of Edith Finch takes what they started with, Unfinished Swan, this giant sparrow, the developers, and just takes it to a whole new level. It is a anthology of short stories with an overarching framework of a family with a family with a curse that means that they die prematurely. They don't die of old age. They die in bizarre ways, and so it has that sort of element of Poe, and then each of the stories for each of the characters in the house. So the house represents the family, and every room represents a member of the family who has died, and each room is then contains within it a new type of gameplay for the game. Yeah. So it's just, and each room is transportative. So you enter them in weird and wonderful ways. There are tunnels in this house, and there are, you know, sort of sometimes you climb out of a window to get out of one room and find the next, and some of them are like weird towers built onto the top of the house, and some of them there's a book and you open the book and it's actually a door, and yeah, it's just you actually climb inside a story, and I love it. The way the text appears in the game, it will like sort of, it'll rest on top of a gate as you open it, and then sometimes the words float away on the wind if the story's about a wind or a stormy day, or just everything about it is like, has just storytelling sort of threaded through the whole thing. It's a really fantastic game. And so beautiful, and the way it incorporates gameplay and story and environmental storytelling is just a joy.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I'm in full agreement. I don't think I have anything else to add there. I think we did a review of it, didn't we? We did an episode on it, at least, yeah, discussing it. And yeah, I think we both really loved that game.
Mm-hmm.
And now I wish I'd put it on my list, because yeah, no, it's absolutely brilliant.
yeah, I think it is just one that reflects, you know, everything I like, basically. It's kind of gothic and got horror and, yeah, sort of kitschy horror and stories and everything. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a keeper. So, our fifth and last game to what's missing? What haven't we represented of ourselves yet?
Yeah. Well, I feel like, no, I feel like you'd be expecting me to say something different. Like there's a big hole in this one, which you always tell me that I'm obsessed with, and I don't think I'm as much obsessed with as I am. But I'm actually not going to say Dark Souls for my fifth one.
Yeah,
that does not appear on my list. What will appear on my list is, I guess it actually, in a lot of ways, it is a progenitor to Dark Souls, but that's not why I like it. My last one is The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo. And for me, that's kind of, it's kind of the pinnacle of the Super Nintendo era. It's like, this sort of, you know, what are your five favorite games question often comes up, like on Twitter and off Twitter, and it's something you kind of always think about as a gamer anyway. You know, what is my favorite game ever? What is the best game that I've ever played? And I've never had a definitive answer.
Mm.
But the closest, I think, to having a definitive answer is Link to the Past, which I will hold up as an almost perfect game. There is almost nothing wrong with it.
Mm.
It's this large, sprawling, well-designed, two-dimensional world. And it's kind of, I mean, it's two-dimensionally viewed, and but it is, you know, multiple floors, and it is a three-dimensional kind of map. And it's got this gameplay that kind of set the standard for Nintendo games afterwards, in that Nintendo have this, I don't know if it's an official thing which they've ever said in an interview, but if you play games like Super Mario Odyssey or Breath of the Wild, they have this obsession with making the basic actions very satisfying. And I think that's something that started very early on in Link to the Past. Every item in that game, every weapon is satisfying to use and feels real and present within the world. Like, from the way you're... If you swing your sword while you're near a wall, it will clink off the wall rather than, you know, hit the enemy. If you fire an arrow at an enemy, it will transfer force into that enemy and knock them backwards in a sort of semi-realistic way. So everything about playing it is very satisfying, and all of that is laid on top of just a very detailed, very cleverly designed world, which is full of dungeons and puzzles to find and solve. And yeah, I still play it about once a year. It's kind of like every Christmas I watch Die Hard, and every Christmas I play through Link to the Past again. I've played it so many times now that I can't play it as I was before, because I know too much about it. I know where I'm going, but I still enjoy what I'm doing.
Mm.
And yeah, it's one of my very favorite games, and the best Zelda game until... I guess Breath of the Wild is a better game, but it is doing something different.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's my fifth.
Mm, nice. My fifth is City of Heroes. Because I like comic books.
Is that all you're going to say?
Because yeah. I like superheroes. Mm-hmm. So, because I suppose comics are much broader now than they once were. They were once synonymous with superheroes, and now they are much more than that, which is lovely and great. But City of Heroes represents my love of a good old-fashioned lycra clad cloak wearing superhero. And I'd never played an MMO before City of Heroes, because it always felt like an intimidating space. Like, you needed to know what was going on, and but as soon as I found out that there was a game with superheroes where you could actually be in a city with other superheroes, it was too much of a pull for me to, my fears kind of were pushed to the back, basically.
Yeah.
My laptop at the time wouldn't run it, so I immediately went and bought like a £2,000 PC. Because I was earning quite good money at the time. I had a really good freelance job, that basically doubled my income with all my other freelance work, and so I was I had quite a lot of cash at the time. So I just paid outright this £2,000. PC to run City of Heroes. It was my City of Heroes machine, and it was incredible just going and being in this city with all these amazing, beautiful heroes with all their powers, and people were floating above the huge sort of titanic statues of the main heroes of the setting. And there were some really classic sort of quest levels to go on and things, and it just brought comic books to life. And I really liked the community, because the community were all comic book nerds, and at that time it still wasn't as mainstream as it is now. So it was mainly aging comic book nerds, so the community was pretty mature, and I'm still friends. I got a birthday wish from someone I used to play with on City of Heroes. We've never met in the flesh, and we still call each other by our character names. It was just a really great community, and you could write the origin story of your hero, and when people clicked on your character, they could read your origin story, which was just so fantastic. So I used to spend ages dreaming up this origin story, and then sometimes when you're running past, someone would do a tell to you and go, "Oh, cool origin," and you'd be like, "Thanks." And it was really nice, and we'd just sort of role play, and there were some good role players in there, which was really nice, so you could just stay in character. It was just a really great fun game. It had the best character gens
It really did, yeah.
It was just, you could spend hours, you could spend 2 days making a character easily in there.
Yep.
It was so good. It was just so much variety. Yeah, it was just endless fun. I'm so sad that it is no longer. Closed. Yeah, so I logged back in to watch the server blink out, which was really, really sad. But and then you'd have like costume competitions and stuff like that.
I was going to mention those, yeah.
Yeah, to gather at a certain place in the city, and then your costume would be judged, and and then there was like a nightclub. There was like this secret nightclub and stuff, and it was just a really great game. Good fun. So I recommend it to people, but you can't play it. So it's kind of a flawed choice.
Recommended to time travelers and people already in the past.
Exactly. So such a great game. And that's it.
Yeah.
So those are our recommendations. Tell us
top five, power five.
Yes. Yeah, for now.
I've changed my mind about like two of them since we started. So yeah, it's never going to be a list that we can pin down.
I'm pretty good. Those are just like, there's a solid five I've come up with. I'm good. I'm happy today. Mm-hmm. I am happy with those five.
Yeah.
So tell us yours, and how can they do that, Drew?
In the comments. You can find us on GameIndustry.com in the podcast section. You comment there. You can find us on Twitter at ArgueTheCast. You can find us on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, all the places you can find podcasts.
Yeah.
And any of those will have a rating or a comment system. Just get in touch with us. And
Really nice when people say hello and that they've enjoyed an episode, because we're never sure. We just come here and ramble at each other and hope somebody likes it somewhere. We got some good comments on the role-playing one when we did tabletop role-playing games. So let us know if there's something we've done that you really enjoyed and you'd like to hear more of that kind of stuff, because that's always good, and it's always nice to have ideas. Otherwise, we have to think them all up ourselves. But so that's it for this time, and until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.